Today on the Political Theory of Everything, I will be giving you your daily dose of news for today's date, Wednesday, December 22nd. All right, and to start off our news, we're going to go on a similar tone as yesterday with COVID-19. However, this one is going to be an interesting read with a comparison of two articles. I would like to update in the UK. There have been 7 COVID-19 deaths due to Omicron. I'm not sure about elsewhere. It's really difficult to find those numbers right now as it's pretty new. So I'll try to keep you updated on that. But in the UK, 7 out of 10,000 new cases, I think, something like that. I forget what it is. But it's along those lines. Or it's 7 right now, and they've had 10,000 new cases. It's really weird numbers right now. It's really hard to get a grasp for. But we will continue on with Omicron. So you've probably heard about it now, but the White House had a statement related to COVID from their COVID-19 response team and public health officials on December 17th of this year, obviously. This was posted at 11:06 a.m. And here it says just a bunch of stuff about just getting vaccinated. For those who are vaccinated, get a booster, all that stuff. But then you've probably seen it around social media. There's a short little couple sentences here, actually one sentence here, directed towards the unvaccinated specifically. Quote, from the White House, quote, "For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death for yourselves, your family, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm," end quote. So that right there is what the White House COVID-19 response team had to say. It was released on whitehouse.gov. So there's that from the White House team, and that's their stance on Omicron, that it is going to cause us a winter of severe illness, which we actually have not seen many hospitalizations from Omicron. I think a lot of countries don't even have hospitalizations because of it yet, but you know, we'll pass that. So obviously severe illness, that doesn't seem to be it. And then how can you have death without severe illness? So it doesn't seem as though that's going to be an issue, as most of the cases seem to be mild as of now. But that's where we move ahead to an article that was originally posted by the Washington Post. But unfortunately, I don't have a subscription to the Washington Post, so I have to read you a version of it from The Hill. But they get across the same message. So keep this quote from the White House in your mind, severe illness and death, and then listen to this article from The Hill. Heck, even the title. From The Hill. South Africa ground zero for Omicron, now seeing surprising plunge in cases. So you see that title from the Washington Post. From The Hill, and then from the Washington Post, it says South Africa's huge Omicron wave appears to be subsiding just as quickly as it grew. That's the title from the Washington Post. South Africa's huge Omicron wave appears to be subsiding just as quickly as it grew. So, basically, South Africa's top infectious disease scientist, who has been leading the country's pandemic response, said Wednesday that the country had rapidly passed the peak of new Omicron cases, and judging by preliminary evidence, he expected every other country or almost every other country to follow the same trajectory. Quote, if previous variants caused waves shaped like Kilimanjaro, Omicron's is more like we're scaling the north face of Everest. End quote. Salim Abdul Karim said in an interview referring to the near vertical increase in infections that South Africa recorded in the first weeks of December. Quote, now we're working going right back down the south face, and that is the way we think it will work with a variant like Omicron, and perhaps even more broadly what we'll see with subsequent variants at this stage of the pandemic. End quote. So the top health official from South Africa is basically saying that every other wave is just going to be like this, just this little short spike, basically no negative deaths or anything like that, no negatives, severe illness. It's just going to spike, okay, cool, and then go right back down. They've had at least 3,353,106 cases since February of 29th, 2020, and you can see it is an extremely steep spike from Omicron, but then you can also see it just drops. It just dropped off the face of the earth. So for some reason, Washington Post is letting me read their article right now, so I'm going to keep reading it. Just a week ago, South Africa was seeing skyrocketing positivity rates and massive lines for testing, but during the first days of the week, Of this week, there has been a turnaround in rates and stress on testing facilities in addressing the surge of infections. South Africa had decided not to impose a lockdown or other major restrictions, although many countries, including the United States, impose restrictions on travelers originating in South Africa and neighboring countries. We also have, from Mayor Bowser, we had the tweet talking about new COVID restrictions, such as everyone having to be vaccinated by January 15th to go into restaurants and stuff like that, and then also everyone in not only public schools but private schools, where she has no control, so that'll be turned around real quick. But that private schools and public schools, all people being educated, all schools had to have their students vaccinated by March 1st, I believe it was, which obviously won't happen because she can't control private schools and their like COVID rules. So we'll see, honestly, how well that works out for her. I doubt very well, to be honest. But on Monday, the United States' top infectious disease expert, Anthony S. Fauci, said the Biden administration was considering lifting those travel restrictions, given that the community spread of the variant was occurring in many countries. And then that's what they did. They lifted the travel restrictions, I believe, or they're going to very, very, very shortly. So that's what we're seeing now from the Biden administration in relation to COVID-19. And so we continue on in this article. Also on Wednesday, South Africa's National Institute for Communicable Diseases released a study, not yet peer-reviewed, that bolstered earlier findings from the country that Omicron was causing fewer hospitalizations and instances of severe side effects than previous coronavirus variants. So boom, right there. It already said that we were going to overwhelm the hospitals. White House promised us we were going to overwhelm the hospitals on vaccinated people. And yet... apparently, this actually doesn't cause very much hospitalizations or severe illness, which was also promised by the White House that we would have a winter of severe illness and death, but yet seems as though Omicron disagrees. But we continue on. The study found that Omicron variant was 80% less likely to lead to hospitalization than the Delta variant, and that for patients who were hospitalized, the risk of severe illness was 30% lower. Karim said that both the quick peaking of cases and Omicron's lower severity could be due to multiple country-specific factors in South Africa, the most prominent being that more than 70% of the South Africans have been infected by previous variants, probably giving a greater proportion of the population a more robust antibody response. I thought natural immunity was not a good thing, but I don't know anymore. Karim noted that Omicron accounted for nearly every new coronavirus case in South Africa last week. Recent data from the United States showed that more than 70% of new U.S. cases were caused by the variant. Anyways, it continues on, just talking about a bit more, but it just talks about some of the new restrictions that have been created, which I've already mentioned to you guys about, like what Mayor Bowser is doing and stuff like that. The Hill really doesn't have anything too different that the Washington Post originally had. The Washington Post was the first one I saw about it, which is why I wanted to read that one, and I'm shocked I was able to. That was all right there, the Washington Post that I read. I don't know how I got by it without a membership. Maybe it was like a one-time read, and then I have to get a membership, but there is that from the Washington Post, and I just really wanted to compare the White House's message to, you know, what's actually being said about Omicron. Yeah, pretty much The Hill says the same thing, so I'm not going to worry about reading The Hill to you. I promised you yesterday that I would get back to you on the LA students. So there was two students. So it's not a huge number, but still, two students, you know, we open the door and say, well, two students isn't that big of a deal, and then they do three, and then four, and then 100. It slowly grows, and that's where you don't even want to crack the door open. You just want to keep it closed. And so hopefully this is, we close the door. We don't allow stuff like this to even remotely come close to happening ever again. But here is this title. The best article I could find on it was from Real Clear Politics. So that's a new source for us today. Title, Parent. LA school vaccinated students without consent in exchange for pizza told them not to say anything. So it starts off the article. Barack Obama Global Prep Academy administered the COVID-19 vaccine to at least two students without the consent of their parents and offered them pizza in exchange. According to the mother of a 13-year-old student, her son brought home a vaccine card and was told not to say anything by the person who administered the shot. Quote, I should have been involved, The lady that gave him the shot and signed the paper was the one that told my son, "Please do not say anything. I don't want to get in trouble." End quote. Basically, she's just like, that hurts that she would do, that this is something that happened. But it goes into just the back and forth between the parent and the reporter talks, because this is more talking about the interview that happened with the parent and the attorney. So that's pretty much what happened, is the LA County School District was giving, or LA County School, Barack Obama Prep Academy, was giving people vaccines, or the two students, I should say, vaccines in exchange for pizza. So that was more of a quick update for you guys, so we'll move on from there. So next up, Fox News. Title: Biden says 2024 re-election run depends on his health. Subtitle: Biden admits he wishes he had thought about ordering half a billion test kits 2 months ago. President Biden on Wednesday added a caveat to his contention that he is planning to run for re-election in 2024, saying that he would do so if he remains in good health. Oh, I missed a part in the South Africa story that I now am unable to find. So I'm going to go, okay, there is something I'm going to pull from the Hill. I forgot that I wanted to say this. Here you go. So I'm sorry I'm jumping backwards, but we're going back to the South Africa and how Omicron isn't that bad. So this is what Karim said, the medical professional said. He estimated that, quote, or sorry, that South Africa is, quote, between 2 and 3 weeks ahead of the US and about 2 ahead of Norway and Denmark, and substantially ahead of probably up to 4 weeks the UK and rest of Europe, end quote. So he believes, if America follows a similar trend, that Omicron spike that we have right now is going to be basically gone in 2 to 3 weeks. But here we are ordering 500 million at-home test kits for the super serious Omicron variant that, as we saw from that South Africa study where it originated, it doesn't seem to be that serious. And South Africa is in communist China, so they won't lie or they won't take lying as lightly as China would. But we see Biden, we go back to our Fox News story. Sorry for that little jump around, but back to the Fox News story. I will just say that 2 weeks is not the same as an entire winter. Winter ends March 21st. 2 weeks from now is basically January 10th. So we're 2 months away from winter, or 2 months there from winter ending. So it's not a winter of serious illness, death, and hospitalizations, by the way. So that's just, that White House statement was absolutely incredible. Biden made the assertion in response to a question from ABC News anchor David Muir, who asked the president if he intended to seek re-election, especially in light of the promise he made in 2020 that he would serve 8 years if re-elected. Quote, "Yes, but I am a great respecter of fate. Fate has intervened in my life many times. If I'm in the health I'm in now, I'm in good health. If I'm in good health, then in fact I would run again." Is he in good health now? End quote. Biden's response to Muir comes amid speculation whether the 79-year-old president will choose to run again, especially given his age and plummeting poll rating. So at the time of re-election, he would be roughly 82, and when he gets out, he'd be 86 years old. That's not good for anyone that age to be president. I don't care if you are in good health. I mean, that's just wow. Last week, White House Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre assured the White House press corps that Biden intends to run for election in 2024 with Vice President Kamala Harris, despite a report from the Wall Street Journal in which Harris said she and Biden have not discussed whether he plans to run for a second term. If he didn't, I wonder who they would choose as their nominee, because the odds are they have to go against DeSantis, I'm guessing, most likely. But we'll see with that. Muir also asked whether Biden would run again if Trump were to oppose him in 2024. Quote, "You're trying to tempt me now? Sure. Why would I not run against Donald Trump if he were the nominee? That would increase the prospect of running," end quote. So there you go, a little trash talking, a little shade being thrown. That's pretty good. Regarding whether his administration's response to the surge in Omicron cases has been adequate in the light of the lack of rapid at-home test kits, Biden stopped short of saying his administration had failed, but also expressed regret that he had not ordered more kits sooner. I also think it's funny because Biden said that nobody responsible for over 200,000 COVID deaths should be president of the United States, as if anyone's responsible, but we'll go with that. which would leave him responsible for over 600,000 COVID-19 deaths in the United States. So why is he not stepped down as president? I mean, it's just, we need to be very careful of the verbiage used by presidents and presidential candidates and how their goal isn't more so to actually say something true. It's just to get you riled up and emotional, as we can see by that right there from President Biden, like that type of tweet. But anyways, we move on to a next article from CNN. The title of this one, Supreme Court schedules January 7th oral arguments and challenges to Biden vaccine mandates. The Supreme Court said Wednesday it is scheduling oral arguments for January 7th in the cases challenging the Biden administration's COVID-19 vaccine requirements for large employers and certain healthcare workers. The arguments were scheduled after Supreme Court Justices Samuel Alito and Brett Kavanaugh were asked to intervene in lower court disputes over the mandates. Kavanaugh had been asked by challengers to the employer mandate to reverse an appeals court ruling that said the administration could enforce its vaccine or testing rules for large companies. Kavanaugh and Alito had separately been asked by the Justice Department to reverse appeals court orders against the healthcare worker requirement, which applies to healthcare staff at providers that participate in Medicare and Medicaid. The appeals court orders have left the mandate frozen in about half the country. For now, the court is leaving in place the status quo around the requirements. The Biden administration has said it will not begin enforcing the employer mandate until January 10th, and the government has said it's not implementing the healthcare worker mandate while the legal challenges play out. The White House basically said that they're confident both of them are legal and constitutional, which we will see. I'd hope they say that, honestly. The court's rare move to bypass the normal process and to hear oral arguments now comes as the coronavirus pandemic rages globally and the Omicron variant takes hold over the holiday season. The employer mandate at issue would impact some 80 million workers across the country, while the administration's vaccine requirement for healthcare workers covers more than 10.3 million people in the United States. The article continues on and talks about people's issues with the executive order move, executive branch's power to act unilaterally. In her request that the Supreme Court reverse lower court orders blocking the healthcare worker mandate, U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloger argued that so far the, quote, unprecedented pandemic, end quote, has killed 800,000 Americans and, quote, the Secretary of Health and Human Services exercised his express statutory authority to protect the health and safety of Medicare and Medicaid patients by requiring healthcare facilities that choose to participate in those programs to ensure that their staff are vaccinated, end quote. The mandate does allow for medical and religious exemptions, however, obviously, because they have to. So I'll just leave that at that article. I think it's interesting we see this just coming up with the new arguments that they're going to have in January 7th, and we'll see if anything actually happens with that. But until then, I'll try to keep you updated, but it will be a while. We move on to The Blaze. So the title of this one, radio host Dean Obaidallah claims, quote, the GOP is a white supremacist fascist movement that has rejected democracy and embraced both autocracy and violence, end quote. I really wanted to point something out. He tweets two things back to back, and he says this, quote, if you ever wonder what it felt like to live in 1930s Germany, you're getting a sense of it today. The GOP is a white supremacist fascist movement that has rejected democracy and embraced both autocracy and violence. The today's GOP is how democracies die, end quote. He then follows it up with another tweet and says this, quote, re-upping this because it triggered the fascists on the right. They think they can silence us. They have confused us for the old Democrats. We don't want common ground with these Republicans. We want to destroy them to save our beloved republic, period, end quote. So I'm gonna quickly, he says, we want to destroy them to save our beloved republic. But then in the first tweet, he says, today's GOP is how democracies die. So according to Dino, the GOP is no threat to America. I mean, right here he says, today's GOP is how democracies die. But then in the following tweet, he says, our beloved republic, as America is a republic. I think that's interesting because I think Dino is trying to warn other countries, not us. I think he's definitely warning other countries that are democracies because it says, today's GOP is how democracies die. But we're not a democracy in America. So I think this is really nice of Dino. You know, maybe he's warning other countries that the GOP is how democracies die, but good thing we're in a republic, which Dino is telling us We are okay because we are a republic. In fact, we are the our own beloved republic. So we are safe from the GOP, in case you were worrying. I know all of you were. We continue on, but those are the two tweets that he had. There's another one, but it's not very applicable. It was more of a lead up as he was comparing the GOP to Nazis. We continue to some rebuttals. One from Dan McLaughlin, the National Review Online senior writer. Quote, "These people have been saying this stuff since before I was born. Meanwhile, they're the ones constantly wanting to tear up or ignore the Constitution, abolish the Senate, pack the court, and take one power after another from elected bodies and insulate them from popular account," end quote. There is another one from Sean Smith. Quote, "ROFL, it amazes me that these people all think this. What party is talk is all about taking people's rights away and destroying the Constitution sure isn't the GOP," end quote. We'll just go one by one through this. Dean O said that the GOP is a white supremacist group, which doesn't make sense because we just elected an African American woman to lieutenant governor in Virginia named Winsome Sears. So that just doesn't make sense to me. The next one he says a fascist movement, which really I think just stems out of January 6th. We move on from there, has rejected democracy. The entirety of America rejected democracy because we aren't a democracy. The most democracy you'll get in America is how the county will say on an election, do we have permission to borrow $500,000 to update schools? That's the most you'll get democracy-wise. But even then, you have your school board, which you elected to represent you, which is republic. And then you move on all the way up to the federal level, where you voted in the Congress and all that to represent you. So once again, a republic. Interesting, Dean O. As you too, as an American living in America, have rejected democracy. So, Dean O, if anything, you are our threat. You are a threat to democracy, and other countries need to be aware of you, someone who lives in a republic and favors a republic because you have not moved out. We move on. He also says, embraced both autocracy and violence. Autocracy is a single person leading government, which doesn't make sense to me as Republican. And means that you're voted into office and that people represent people. So once again, not autocracy. We move on. He says violence. Let's just look at the summers of BLM. I think this violence one really stems just out of January 6th once again. But we see how that doesn't make sense because of, well, look at BLM. That's a left wing. That's violence. Wasn't there violence in some of the BLM riots? Maybe not every single one, but in a number of them, they cost billions of dollars of damage over the summer. So look where we are, Dean. Look where we are. I just thought that was a funny tweet. Once again, representing how they use verbiage to invoke emotions that are a bit extra, unneeded, and they try to get you riled up for their cause and their agenda so that they can have power. We move on to CBS. This one a lot better. And the best news I will deliver you today. Title: Potential Breast Cancer Vaccine Undergoing Testing. A potential vaccine that would prevent the most deadly and aggressive type of breast cancer, triple negative breast cancer, is undergoing testing. The key protein for the vaccine, which would be a holy grail of cancer treatment, was found through, quote, a matter of luck and tenacity in going through databases and looking for proteins, end quote. Dr. Vincent Tuhai, I really hope he said I said that right, said also like finding a needle in a haystack. Haystack, geez. The vaccine works by jumpstarting the immune system and attacking any tumors that can contain a specific protein that should not be present unless a woman is lactating. Unless a woman is lactating. Quote, once we've established that we can produce an immune response, we want to rapidly move it earlier to the disease process again, to the prevention setting where we think it will have an even greater impact," end quote. That was said by Dr. Thomas Budd. Budd and Tuhai are, or Tuhi, are leading a trial still in its early stages. If successful, the vaccine would be given to young, healthy women at higher risk for breast cancer, which is known as a triple negative. The study, though, these types of studies offer hope to women touched by cancer. Quote, I was 35 years old, Christy Blair said when she was asked when she was diagnosed with cancer. My youngest was 3 at the time. But that's pretty much the article. But that'd be huge. DNA was always thought to be the key to solving breast cancer, and here we are. It looks as though it is, or not even breast cancer, but cancer as a whole. But this would be a huge step for cancers if this works out. But we move on. One last article from the Daily Wire. Title: Biden claims economy today is stronger than before pandemic. I saw this and I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. So here we begin. Even after recent polls have shown that the president's unfavorability ratings in regards to the economy are lower than President Jimmy Carter's near the same time of his first term, Joe Biden claims the economy is stronger today than it was before the COVID-19 pandemic. And you go, well, okay, interesting. It's higher, certainly. Is it stronger? That's the question. There's a difference between higher and stronger. In a virtual meeting on Wednesday with the Supply Chain Disruptions Task Force, Biden discussed the progress the economy has made since he took office. Quote, "Today, America is the only leading economy in the world where household incomes and the economy as a whole are stronger than they were before the pandemic, even accounting for price increases," end quote. I find that very interesting. I doubt that. Biden even quoted an anonymously, sorry, gee, quoted an anonymous analyst who said that 2021 was the, quote, strongest first year economic track record of any president in the last 50 years, end quote. I like how one economic analyst ever said that, or not even. It's just an analyst. He then went on to complain about the economy he was given when sworn into office. Quote, "The economy I inherited nearly a year ago wasn't just in crisis, it wasn't working for people. And I told you that's the only reason I ran. It's about the time the middle class and working class people got a shot," end quote. That's why I, President Joe Biden, wish to invoke higher taxes on corporations, which will eventually leak down to the middle class and working class, and why I, President Joe Biden, wish to have a capital gains tax, double basically, so that it affects the rich. Oh, wait, no, it ends up affecting the middle class and working class because the rich don't care. It doesn't make a difference in their checkbook. He then went on to complain about yes. Yet the middle and working class people Biden says he ran for seem to be unsatisfied with the president's job and the economy so far. Shocking. As reported by the Daily Wire, a poll released Monday by CNN showed that the Biden's economy, Biden's economic approval rating is worse than President Jimmy Carter's ratings close to the same time of his presidency. So Carter's economic net approval rating was -8, and Biden's is -13. The president, however, seems to be ignoring the latest polls on the economy and his handling of it. He credited his infrastructure plan for starting, quote, to build an economy from the bottom up and middle out, end quote. He says, "We're making progress. We're making progress." I think this is interesting. When he inherited the market, he was at about 1.7 or 1.8% inflation. He then proceeds now to have an inflation of about 7%. I'm not sure how that's stronger. I mean, unless you like inflation, then I don't know how that's stronger. Maybe it's stronger because it pushes them towards socialism and authoritarianism, but who knows? It's shocking to me that he said stronger. I understand the word higher. It's doing. It's at high the highest numbers it's been at. That makes sense because if you look at it, I guess 38 or whatever it reached, 38,000. But it doesn't make sense that you say stronger. I mean, Tesla consistently has been on its way down. Cryptocurrencies currently are absolutely getting demolished as Bitcoin has gone from like 67,000 to basically $48,000, $49,000, and all the other cryptocurrencies have pretty much mirrored that right there. It's just a very interesting statement and approach from President Biden, I think also trying to reassure people. And I think he recognizes his extremely low ratings that he has right now. Just 1 in 6 voters say that they are better off financially than they were a year ago, and a majority rates their personal financial situation negatively. That's a reversal since August, when over half said their finances were in positive shape. Interesting. Very interesting. And that's from CNN. Two-thirds think Biden's leadership is at least somewhat responsible for inflation. Rising prices over the last 6 months have caused financial hardship for two-thirds of voters. That climbs to three-quarters among those living in lower-income households. So by more than 2 to 1, people say that the president's economic policies have hurt rather than helped them personally. That's largely driven by almost two-thirds of Republicans saying they've been hurt, nearly five times the number of Democrats who say the same. For comparison, one-third of Democrats said they had been hurt by former President Donald Trump's economic policies in December 2018, Fox News surveyed. So that's going to conclude our news for tonight, but it's a lot of very interesting articles. And a lot of emotion is trying to be provoked with the White House, with their press briefing, and then you have South Africa, and then you have the LA parents, and then you have Biden, and the Supreme Court, and then you have the radio host, and just a lot of emotions are on the high right now, and you can see people in politics are trying to really keep those going and stir those up by tweeting like this. And making statements like this, and that's what we have to, as citizens, watch for and be wary of, and take into account that they are going to exaggerate so that they can get you even more onto their side. And we need to look at this as with an objective and calm view, as I hope all of you do when listening to my show. But until tomorrow, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your Wednesday and a wonderful rest of your week. Thank you so much for listening.